Where is everybody? Hobart, have you seen anybody? What's that you got in your mouth? Oh, it's a letter. Okay, can I have it? Oh, thank you. Dear Dad, Super Rika and I and Miss Dunmore have gone to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. We are currently in the middle of a big fight. Send us lots of money. We need bail money. Love, Rashi. P.S. Yeah. Okay, well, happy St. Patrick's Day, folks. Hi, this is Paul Dini, and I'm here with Muggsy, and Misty has vamoosed. She is off she is at a conference for voiceover artists tonight, so that leaves me here with Ezra and Emily and Muggsy and Deuce, who is running around somewhere, and of course Hobart, who is off devouring part of a wallaby in the corner. Hi, Hobart. Yeah. So how are you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. What's new?
Just getting through some back pain.
What happened?
I bent over to pick up an empty styrofoam coffee cup.
And that was it?
Yep, the whole thing went kablooey.
Oh my God, yeah, and that's what did it, huh?
Yeah, I could not, like, barely stand up straight after that, and it was the beginning of my work day, and it was on Friday, and I'm just barely getting through it now.
Oh my Lord, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
But what do you think it was, because that was, like, the first thing you had done during the day,
I think that has something to do with, like, it's just started raining, you know, yeah. Everything's cold, my back was probably a little tight, I have an old injury that probably just...
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I thought, what, were you moving a piano, or tossing anvils or something?
No, empty styrofoam cup.
A week ago, Misty went to Santa Fe, and we'll have the story of her big Santa Fe trip. It went very well when she was performing magic down there. And a few days before, she rented a van, and she was transporting one of her bigger illusions, and we had to actually remove the seats from the back of the van.
Oh.
And that was arduous, and I was expecting, like, there's no way, you know, because I'm a total wimp when it comes to stuff like that, you know. Uh-huh. Anything like, you know, the limit of my masculine powers begins and ends with pickle jars. I can open them, usually because I know that I'm going to get a pickle.
There's a reward.
Yeah, a pickle or a jalapeno or something like that, you know, that's the incentive. But when it comes to moving stuff, you know, I'll reach for my wallet before I'll reach for, you know, like the thing to actually lift it up. It's like, let's hire somebody to lift this. I mean, there's got to be help we can get. I'll run down to the paint store and I'll get a few happy and willing nationals to over to help us with a task before I'll actually, you know, do something, which makes life interesting considering my wife has lots of big, huge, bulky things that need moving around until, you know, for her shows. You know, it's not like she can just say, you know, that's supposed to be magic boxes reappear at Magic Castle in Zatanna backwards, although I got bored about halfway through trying to figure out how to actually say that and muffed it. But that doesn't really work. She can't just poof and it's there. You have to, you know, move shit around first. So I thought, you know, when we were taking out these seats, we had to take the seats out of the car, and I was convinced they don't come out of the car, they're rooted down. Are you gonna unscrew that, all that stuff? You can't do that. We don't even own this thing. It's like, no, they pop out. And they did pop out after a fashion, you know, or they were able to be removed, but you know, she had to wrestle it from the inside, I had to wrestle it from the outside. I just gave up. And she was furious, you know. And I thought for sure I was going to, you know, wreck a disc or pull or get a hernia or something like that from something like that. I didn't, but you know, she did all. I'm pleased to admit. I mean, I'm happy to admit that she did all the hard work. And I guess I should say I'm the first one to admit that she did all the hard work. Wasn't exactly happy, but my solution to the problem, rather than remove the seats, is just like, I'll drive the van back and get a and rent a bigger van, you know. Just we can just take this back and either rent a bigger van that doesn't have seats in the back, or we'll go to U-Haul and rent that. And her response was, this is the van I rented, shut up and move the seats out. Besides, we're not going to, you know, U-Haul is closed and that's not an option. And
it'd take another couple hours just to deal that one.
You know, they don't have a bigger van, you know, but my response is like, ah, I don't want to move the front. I want to move this thing around. It's heavy. So, but, luckily, remarkably, I didn't strain nothing, even though, you know, I barely moved anything, but I figured if you had hurt yourself, it would have been something like that.
Yeah,
so.
No, I'm the first to, you know, be the guy that lifts up the giant heavy things too. And I'll just carry something on my shoulder. And
cause you tote this stuff around. Yeah. Too. This stuff is heavy. This stuff you bring in every week.
But it's something as simple as just bending over for a coffee cup that gets me.
Well, that's always the way. It's something really simple. I mean, Jack, one of the things that gives me kind of nightmares, you know, it's sort of like Jack Kirby died reaching for a newspaper.
Oh my goodness, did not realize that.
He walks outside, it's a nice sunny day, I think a Sunday as I recall, in February, he's going to get the paper, picks up the paper, boom! Just heart attack did him in on the spot, you know, and could always, and this is one of the things when you work out, you know, your coach always tells you, or any fitness guy will say, stretch in the morning and get the blood circulating, because quite often it is something like that. It's just like a freaky thing that happens that...
Yeah.
That and then you go down as a result of that. So, but you never know what's going to happen. My mom had a bad stroke in September. She was at the gym. She was just on the treadmill, and then suddenly everything got kind of weird. And luckily, she got off the treadmill, so she didn't fall. But she slumped against the wall and passed out. And you know, so that luckily there was not more damage than the stroke, and she's actually recovered pretty well. But still, you know, there are some. A lot of issues there, but still, it's always something weird and funky like that. So, but I'm glad you're okay now.
Well, thank you.
So, are you having any treatment for it, or
is no? I'm just taking some ibuprofen and rest. That's it. I figure like chiropractor, I have to kind of go out of my way to go deal with that, and the doctor, the most they're going to do is give me a painkiller.
Well, you know, I see a chiropractor, and she puts us. You know, because we see her every so often, she puts us on a roller or a hot bed or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much good it does. I always sort of accepted chiropractors as knowing what they're doing, and ours usually does. But there are people who just don't believe in them. They just say,
I mean, technically, they don't have to have a whole lot of education to do it.
Uh-huh.
But, and I'm on the same wavelength. I've known chiropractors that are very much on the hippy dippy sort of like, oh, you take these imaginary drugs and that'll help you.
Uh-huh.
But for the most part, they seem to always help my back.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if I'm having major issues, they can at least get me walking again.
Yeah.
So I don't completely knock them, but I don't put all my trust into them either.
Mm. I don't know. I feel like what they tell you to do is born out of some common sense and probably a fair amount of study. But then again, you'll have a sports medicine coach who might know the same thing, you know, so, you know, coach who knows about, you know, dealing with injuries and you know, that, a lot of that is warm-up stuff. I've got a really good coach, and she, before we exercise, I always warm up, and then I was cool down at the end. I remember there was a period in my 20s where I would get these just savage back aches, like they would just incapacitate me, and they, it wasn't because I'd lifted anything, but they were almost seasonal, and it happened either in the springtime or the fall, and it happened when I was living in Boston, and I went to see a doctor, and I really had to just like, I'm like 24, and I'm 23 actually, and I'm using a cane to get into the doctor. And he's saying, what you've got is a virus. And apparently there was a virus of some sort in my back muscles.
Wow.
That would recur every once in a while. And it was mostly, when I was on the East Coast, it happened once or twice out here. And then it just went away when I hit, you know, 25, 26. I either outgrew it or whatever was aggravating my system left it. And I haven't had it really since. But it was just, and it wasn't as a result of how I was sitting. It was just some... like a recurring infection that I had, and it eventually went away or stopped or something.
Yeah.
I never really had an explanation for what it was, but it was sort of like, here, take this and do these. And, you know, he would give me like painkillers because he said, I said, are there stretches or exercises? And he said, no, it's a virus. And there's, other than staying in good shape and healthy, there's nothing you can really do about it, you know, yeah, that it's attacking your muscles. So it'll work itself out or it won't. And it's one of those freaky things where it worked itself out. So, but that's...
I guess just at that age, I need to stretch in the morning, you know?
Well, it's not a bad idea. I always say I should stretch in the morning, and I rarely do. But, you know, I do when I work out. But it's not a bad idea to start every day just to limber up a little bit, because you get to a point, you know, when you get in your 40s and you jump out of bed, and it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Things seem a bit rusty all of a sudden.
Yeah, definitely approaching that.
Yep. So, did you watch the Academy Awards?
No, but I did have an office pool on them, so I was aware of what won and uh-huh, all that stuff. But we don't have cable, so we didn't get the chance to watch it.
Oh, okay. Were there any surprises or upsets? Or
not particularly. I was surprised how much Gravity got.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of it. I knew it wasn't going to win Best Picture, but it deserved everything it got.
Mm-hmm.
Especially like the sound and visual stuff. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
I guess the only surprises were what? The... Matthew McConaughey and his speech.
Well, I didn't see his speech, but he was a big thumbs up to God or something.
Well, no, it was mostly that there's three people he respects in his life, and I'm totally paraphrasing. So,
sure.
Three people he respects in life: God, his family, and himself in 10 years. And the way he kept saying the speech was in the sense of, you got to make yourself your hero, because that way you have something to build up to or whatever. But the way he kept saying it made it sound like he was just kind of an a-hole going, I'm awesome, you know, nobody else matters but me.
He smokes a lot of dope, doesn't he?
I think so, yeah. Oh, okay. Plays the bongos shirtless, that kind of thing.
I can't remember if I ever crossed paths with him. I might have at some point, but for some reason, I think I remember going to a party in Texas, and he was there, and I wound up chatting with him and a bunch of folk. I don't know. It's some of those parties around Austin get kind of weird. That's cool. I'm sorry I missed his speech, but that's interesting. And I didn't see that movie. How was it?
I haven't seen Dallas Buyers Club either, but I heard amazing things about it.
I didn't see anything. I saw Captain Phillips the other night.
Oh, really?
I was over at my brother's house, and he wanted to see a movie, and he bought a new TV, and he has this great, he and his wife just redid their home in Carmel, and they've got a beautiful den with a flat screen and everything.
Oh, wow.
And I think this was the first time they had actually used movies on demand. So we watched Captain Phillips, and I enjoyed that for what it was. It's
like a good movie.
It's a little weird. You kind of know the outcome of it because the guy did survive the experience. Although,
yeah, it was a big news thing.
Yeah, yeah. Although it's interesting to see them, you know, cast somebody in the role, and he played, you know, when here Captain Phillips is obviously still alive somewhere and off sailing, you know, presumably, and seeing Tom Hanks do a real person. Then again, Tom Hanks played Walt Disney, who was, you know, a real person too. Although I think that performance was a bit of a larger, you know, he's a larger than life person.
I thought that was a more interesting portrayal for him. I was surprised how few nominations that got.
Did it get anything?
I think it got best score.
Really?
I don't think it won, but it was nominated for best score.
You know, we had Floyd Norman on the podcast, and he was talking about it, and and he loved the movie. I liked the movie a lot too. I think everybody liked it. And I thought that was an immensely likable movie, and I'm surprised it didn't get anything. I thought Paul Giamatti did a very nice job as the driver.
And oh yeah,
he's a lot of fun to watch. I thought everybody in the movie was really good, and I thought Hanks's portrayal of Disney was fun also. And I don't know. I thought that he it's interesting because he wasn't really Walt the TV host guy, who was kind of different. He was Walt more or less the businessman and the guy who runs the studio, and I felt he found some very nice nuances to the character. And I thought the character in Captain Phillips was was really good too. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, but at this point in his career, he's such a great, I guess he's kind of getting into our realm of senior actors now that you, you kind of expect him to deliver these terrific performances. He's one of my favorite actors. I like Tom Hanks an awful lot. But then again, yeah, for whatever reason, I just didn't see any of the, very few of the nominated movies.
Yeah, I think I saw Gravity and maybe one other of those movies.
Lego Movie nominated?
No.
No, came out a little late.
Yeah, although we did see that. That was amazing. It was one of my favorite movies seen recently.
It was fun, yeah. Yeah. It had some fun stuff in it. Yeah,
it reminded me of Wreck-It Ralph, but the meta aspect was a lot better handled.
Yes, yeah. Kind of, the effect of the real world on, mm-hmm. on the so-called fantasy world. Let's see what else. I had something I was going to say. I like everybody else who's not living under a rock, I saw Frozen and I thought that was fine for animated movie. It was a good choice. I was sorry the Mickey Mouse cartoon didn't win.
I was very surprised now. This is one of the few times Disney did a short that didn't get the win.
Well, it's tricky. You know, I think that here's what I think hampered it a little bit was Disney was such a clear winner for Frozen. Mm-hmm. I felt like they didn't want it to sweep, you know, or else people just didn't see it. I also read this article recently about who watches the animated, you know, the best animated thing. And a lot of the people who vote on it say, I'm not going to watch that crap. My kid goes to see that crap. I drop my kid off and he goes sees that shit. I haven't watched a cartoon since I was a kid. I'm not going to watch that. Where it's like, why waste my time? It's a cartoon. You know, a lot of people, Academy members, apparently really believe that. Like, cartoons. Who cares?
I feel like they feel that way about the documentary subjects, too. And such. Yeah. I feel like that those are mostly phoned in or guessed.
Yeah, documentary subject, short subject, anybody in the Holocaust. Oh, Holocaust story. Okay, that wins.
Yeah.
You know, Holocaust story wins. Starving kids in Africa wins. Struggle. We're not going to give a documentary about Jose the happy chalupa maker. You know, yeah. Jose came to this country when he was 7, and he lives in Arizona, and he has the best chalupa factory in the Southwest. And life is a ball for Jose. It's like no matter how well that's done, mm-hmm. he's not going to win. The happy meerkats, you know, photographed in Africa, is not going to win.
Yeah,
you know, a person living in agony somewhere and dealing with heartache, that'll win. You know, so. But I guess they just didn't want to, you know, I think it might have, like they got to animation, they said, okay, Frozen is the popular choice. Now we got to give it to something classy. We got to give it to something foreign. The thing with the witch, it's sort of cute. This other thing, this thing from France, let's give it to the French thing. That's fine. Then we're done with it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was great, but I just didn't get a chance to see it. It's not available to watch readily.
No, and everybody saw Get a Horse. Everybody loved it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it immensely. I wasn't like surprised that it didn't win per mm-hmm. se, but I did really enjoy it.
Well, I enjoyed it too, and another thing that might have hampered it just a little bit, you know, and I'm not saying they should have changed it because it was, you know, some of the funniest part of the cartoon was. Actually, I bought Frozen off of iTunes, which mm-hmm. came with all the bonus features, including Get a Horse. And I bought it solely because I could watch Get a Horse over and over again on my computer and really study the animation because it's like Eric Goldberg and a team of great 2D animators, you know, doing what they do best. You know, I lapped that up and I really wanted to kind of watch it frame by frame. So I watched it a couple of times straight through. And there's a lot of traditional slapstick in it. Like Horace and Mickey figure out how to move the screen and control things and you know and hammer Pete with his own car. They're hammering him on the head with the car and the pitchfork in the butt and they're really working him over. And I'm thinking that maybe people saw, you know, people who were looking at like classy animation rather than just a funny cartoon looked at that and they say, well, there's an awful lot of slapstick and that cat is getting really badly beaten up and there's some crude jokes and I don't know. It's Mickey Mouse. Doesn't Mickey Mouse already have an Oscar? He doesn't.
Yeah. Admittedly, it wasn't that plot heavy at all.
No.
So, I mean, I totally understand another animated short that just like was able to tell a beautiful dramatic storyline in 5 minutes. That's fantastic. But
sure.
Yeah, it was just fun.
Everybody loved it. And it was yeah. I just think that they felt like, we're already giving it to Frozen.
So yeah.
Split it up a little bit. we can't give them all to Disney. So that was my fear about going in. I was like, oh, they'll probably, you know, they don't want to have a Disney lock on the cartoons.
Mm.
But I don't know. I was actually flying back from Monterey this weekend, right around the time that the Oscars were starting. So I missed most of them, and I was in transit. And you know, I'm following it on my Twitter and mm-hmm. making comments and everything. So I feel like I got the gist of it. But
yeah,
you know, the Oscars is more like an endurance run than anything. You sit through it, and the next day you say, "Yeah, I sat through the Oscars."
Where's my t-shirt?
One of the best gags about the Oscars I remember seeing ever was back in the 80s. There was a British company of comedians and puppeteers. They did a show called Spitting Image.
Yo, I love that show.
I love Spitting Image.
Oh, man, that's great.
So good.
Yeah.
And they once did a parody of the Oscars, and they showed all the A-list actors, which at the time was guys like... Jack Nicholson and a bunch of others coming into their seats, and they were all taking out pillows and blankets.
Oh,
and...
I remember that bit. Yeah.
And getting ready to go to sleep. Because that's pretty much what it is.
And then once they were like, I'm the best actor nominee, and then they all woke up and did their hair and stuff.
Yeah.
And like, posed for the cameras.
Yep.
That was great.
Yeah. I think they did a couple of specials that were set, you know, like lampooning Hollywood in mm-hmm. addition to Britain. I remember... They were still in business they were still doing stuff in the 90s. And I remember, you okay, Mugs? He's okay.
It was smart.
And I remember going over there one Christmas time, and they actually had a live show that it was in Covent Garden. And
wow.
I was walking down the street in Covent Garden, and there's this big baby carriage outside this theater, you know, kind of a weird looking little theater. And inside the baby carriage is... Ronald Reagan, dressed kind of like a homeless person. He's going, "Hey there, you're going to come in and see the show?" And they're recording, they're working him from not off screen, but down from inside. You know, and they're doing this. I don't know if it was pre-recorded or he was actually heckling people as they walked by. It could have been either one. And I looked down this little. It's more like an alley, and on either side are these windows, and there are these big puppets kind of posed in them. And I go, oh, it's Spitting Image. They're doing a show because it's Christmas time and there's a lot of festivities that don't involve Santa Claus or the religious aspect. It's a lot of performance goes on in England when it's Christmas time. So they had this show they were doing, and luck would have it, the next show was starting. So I went in and saw the puppets and hung out afterwards, talked to some of the puppeteers. It was really great. And like a year later, I happened to be over there again for Christmas. And they had an original special that night. And I remember watching it. And half of it was really hysterical, funny celebrity stuff. Mm-hmm. And the other half was like spoofs at Parliament over a water bill or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, something that you would not have known about or thought was funny unless you, you know, lived in England or were affected by, you know, the water and power debate that was going on in Parliament at that point. So
yeah, I was really young when I first noticed Spitting Image.
Yeah.
And I was only aware of the stuff that aired out here. And
yeah.
So they did like the presidential, you know, election stuff mm-hmm. where they're like, you know, have the secret cult of people that decide like Ed McMahon and all these people running and having Sylvester Stallone run for president. I remember
that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was some great stuff. And then it wasn't until later that I realized it was heavily British. And
yeah.
They had all those great Margaret Thatcher routines and stuff. And
yeah. I think everybody grew up with, or else, you know, went to college with singing Land of Confusion, you know, the Genesis song. You know, that was so good with the spoof of Reagan and everything like that.
Yeah, they used all those puppets in that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's still one of my all-time favorite music videos. Yeah, I always loved the Spitting Image, and I remember one time having a meeting over at Steven Spielberg's office, and actually in his office was the puppet they used on him in one of his special, on one of the specials.
Yeah.
And it's weird sitting, you know, he's got a, at the time, I don't know if he still has the same office. This was, you know, 15 years ago. He has very nice office, nice couches and everything. And, you know, he's, and his desk is there. And then he's got kind of the sitting area and he's kind of walking around talking. And it was kind of disconcerting. He would be standing in front of me talking, and then there'd be this other Steven Spielberg, this caricature peeking out of a plant, as I recall, in his office. There was a plant there, and he had somehow situated the puppet so that it was like parting the plant and kind of peering out at everybody in there. So it's
that's awesome.
Steven and his kind of bizarre alter ego.
Those characters are amazing too.
They're great.
They get every aspect of the person.
It's like there's something about British caricature, you know, like, you know, Searle and some of those guys. They really have that, you know, they don't miss a wart or everything. Even pretty people are distorted beyond reality. So that if they find, if you're, you know, a good looking person, never fear, they will find something, you know, a twist of the lip or the way your nose looks or something, that they will do something, you know. That's a master caricature. Mm-hmm. They can capture you in a couple of lines. Bruce Timm does that.
Oh yeah.
You know, there it's like watching, you know, a swordsman. And then, oh no. And it's dead on accurate.
And it's scathing.
Oh, it's scathing. Scathing. I've seen him caricature people where the caricature wasn't even in the picture, but just some essence of them was, and it worked in such a way that it just sort of like wounded you to the quick and everything. It was really kind of remarkable. Let's see. Speaking of Bruce Timm and animation and everything like that, I guess now's as good a time to talk about that announcement today about Batman. Did you see that?
Actually, no, I missed that.
They announced the next Batman game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was totally in the dark about it. I was 100% ignorant of it. And today I get on, I'm getting ready to start work, and I sit down at the computer and I'm dinking around, you know, getting the news, and I get on my Twitter feed, and suddenly there's like, you have 200 more followers than yesterday. It's like, how did that happen? And then it's like 300, you know, what do you think of the new game? What do you, Arkham Knight, what do you think? What now? I literally typed in, what the who now? What the what? Arkham what? And suddenly everybody's badgering me about this. Wow. And then I joke, Arkham what? And I type in Arkham Knight, and it takes me to a preview for the next Rocksteady game, the next Batman game.
Yeah.
And it is by Rocksteady, and it looks great. And mm-hmm. it's called Batman Arkham Knight. I know nothing about what it is. I had nothing to do with it. And only know that it seems to be another chapter in the Batman Arkham franchise. And mm-hmm. it's got all our old favorite villains back. There's Penguin, Harley Quinn, and Two-Face mm-hmm. that I recall seeing. And apparently a bunch of thugs. Who could be gang members or new people? I wasn't sure. And then there's this great sequence of Batman, of Bruce Wayne getting suited up, you know, in really kind of sturdy looking armor this time. And you hear Thomas Wayne's voice saying, you know, if you read this while I'm, if you get this and I am dead, then please, my son, you know, I hope you will use the Wayne fortune to go off and do great things and don't spend it on flashy cars and silly clothes and everything as he's getting dressed. Uh-huh. And then the Batmobile shows up. And I can't be sure, but it looks like this one, it may be, and no one quote me on this because I'm in the dark with everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like it might be Grand Theft Batmobile.
Oh, really?
Maybe, because he is actually in the car. At one point, you see him fighting a bad guy, then jumping up, executing this great midair flip, and then, actually the car is running right, is the Batmobile is barreling right toward him. He's fighting in the street, and it looks like it's going to plow into him, and he jumps up, flips over, lands in the car, and the canopy closes, and off he roars.
Huh.
Which would be great, because I want, in the first two games, I really wanted there to be a Batmobile
mode. Yeah.
And I wanted to switch from the gameplay to vehicles
mm-hmm.
in the especially in the second game. And in the first game, all we did, all you could do was get in the Batmobile and knock Bane over with it, you know?
Yeah.
And, or else have it hit him by remote control. It was more of a weapon than anything else. But this one looks like you could actually drive it around.
The city's probably big enough to do that, but for some reason I feel like they need to make it a little bigger for that to be a main game mechanic.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe Arkham City does no longer exist. Maybe the walls have come down. Maybe you do have access to the whole city. Yeah. The third game was not a continuation of the... It was called Arkham, but Arkham 1 is the asylum. Arkham 2 is the city is split in half. Game 3 was sort of the origin of Batman, and this one looks like a continuation of the Arkham timeline. So either the city's still up and you're driving around the... I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, my friends who played Origins said it's basically the same sandbox as Arkham City.
Okay.
So it's not walled off, but you only can play in that same area.
Right, right. So, well, this one looks like it's... I read... I didn't read much about it, but and I don't know what was the actual press release and what was, a fan's take on it, you know. But one of the things I read was that it was sometime after Arkham City. So I guess the walls have come down or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The characters looked a little bit more together than they did. So maybe they've been allowed to run around a little bit. Penguin... It was hard to tell if he had a monocle or he still had part of the pop bottle stuck in his head.
I hope it's a pop bottle. That was such a great look.
I think it was the pop. he looked kind of scarred. Harley looked like she was back in some, again, you know, goes by kind of quick. Some version of her nurse's outfit.
Yeah.
You know, she had like the white puffy sleeves again and it looked like she was wearing a skirt. She wasn't wearing the leather pants that she had in Arkham City.
Okay.
And it looked like her hair was kind of two-tone dyed, which I think they did in Arkham City. They did that in Arkham City.
I'm pretty sure. I can't remember.
This goes by so fast. Yeah. I did notice at the very end, there's a bit of her knocking out a cop and putting on his hat. And it says, special downloadable content. Buy the game now and play as Harley Quinn. You know, I'm going like... Or if you pre-order the game, you can play as Harley.
Interesting.
Which I don't know is the same as you can play with Harley or... play, you know, to what point are you Harley?
Yeah. Is it going to be like the cat one where it's like alternative scenes or something, or is it going to be just like a couple, like the fighting sequences where you could be Nightwing or Robin in the fighting engines and stuff? I don't know.
Because if you can play as Harley, I think there are more a few fans out there who would like to say, I don't want to play the game. I just want to be Harley.
Yeah.
Play myself a while. Amuse myself a while. Something like that. It's like, I don't know, man, but it looked like so the gang's all, and Joker doesn't seem to be in the gang. Oh, there's a mystery voice at the front, but I think it's Scarecrow.
Yeah,
because he's saying things kind of like,
yeah, because technically Joker's dead.
Technically, you know, we polished up Joker at the end of at the end of Arkham City. People got really mad that we killed off Joker. And some guys, there are some guys who want me strung up for killing off Talia. Spoiler.
Wow.
But you know, it's Talia. You know, yeah. Ra's al Ghul is immortal. There's a Lavender. Lazarus.
Hundreds of other stories with these characters.
Yeah, I mean, they're dead this time. They come right back. You know,
yeah.
Talia has a Lazarus pit. You know, there's common as hot tubs. Somebody, I guarantee you, at some point. You know, which is not in the game, but you rest assured you can rest assured that some one of her faithful ninjas picked her up and hauled her out of the theater and popped her into a Lazarus pit, and she's probably well at some point. I don't know if she's coming back in the fourth game, but
she's the daughter of the demon.
That's daughter of the demon. You know, the Al Ghul family. Logical. They've got a timeshare condo in the afterlife. They go there, they rest up, you know, Abu or Ubu or whatever his name is, throws their body in the gunk, and back they come.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know when the game's released. I would think in the fall, around Christmas time or something like that. They usually debut them in October. So, you know, this one took me by surprise. I knew that Rocksteady was going to do something. You know,
yeah, of course.
With the DC heroes. I mean, I think Warner's has a ownership stake in the studio now, but... everybody was saying, did you write it? And it's like, no, I didn't write it. But, you know, if it's rock steady, it's going to be good. So,
yeah.
So just enjoy.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm completely in the dark about this one. Although from day one, I had been lobbying for a driving game, you know, or a driving feature in one of them. I wanted to put like an aerial battle in Arkham City.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do Batman with a jetpack or something.
It'd be nice because you'd get a chance to do mini games of like the Batmobile, you know, chasing down an armored car with crooks or something, and you know, get to use the gadgets on the Batmobile. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I it would be interesting to see what they have cooked up for it, and I'm wondering what kind of hardware you'll have to purchase to go on with it. I imagine you'll have to buy like a. I mean, how do you do Grand Theft Auto? It's been a long time since I played. You use a joystick, don't you? Or do you use a wheel, or what do you use?
You can use the regular controllers you have for your playing systems. They're all designed to work with that. Okay. You can buy wheels as well, but with a game like Grand Theft Auto where you're constantly in and out of vehicles, it's harder to handle with just a steering wheel. So they design it towards the controller.
Oh, okay. So, I imagine it'll be... These games come out and so many different, is it formats or platforms?
Platforms.
Yes. That I know that they'll have some version of it that comes out in the DS 3D, you know.
Or yeah, I think the Wii U had stuff for Batman Origins where you can use the screen on your controller to, you know, use detective mode or
something.
They
even have like the Arkham City, I think, came out on the iPhone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The technology today.
I just write them. I don't play them.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
It's been years since I actually sat and played. I think the last game I actually sat down and played for any realistic length of time was the first Grand Theft Auto.
Wow.
Yeah. And just, you know, just kind of lost myself in the game. I stink at driving games.
Like, yeah, me too.
I just want to drive over here. I want to drive off the road.
The only driving game I ever liked was that Burnout series where the object of the game is to crash into people.
Yeah.
Then I'm great.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Mario Kart. I've played Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
You got to play
of
Mario course. Kart. Yeah.
Yeah. Next one's coming out soon.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Mario Kart's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But so this will be interesting to see how this does. And that's all I know about the wonderful and wacky world of video games. So everybody who's been asking me, like, no, I'm not writing it, and yes, the game looks awesome. So everybody buy a copy.
Yep.
And probably be a lot of fun. I think that's about all I got today. You know, that's all I can.
Movies, video games. What more is there to life? Oh, comics. Comics? Any comic stuff going on at all?
Anything? I've been a total ghost at the comic book store. It's not because I'm, you know, there's nothing I'm passing up. I just have been working real hard on new stuff that's not even going to come out for a year or two. And
I've been finally reading some of that Batman 66. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I've seen some of that.
Yeah,
over there. And that does look cool, and that's something to look forward to. They're bringing the show out on DVD
finally.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic! Can't wait.
They should do that around Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And
I thought that's what the plan was last year because we had all those bags with the Batman original or the TV series on it.
I don't know. Who knows? You know, it's hard. You know, I can't. The DVD market has changed so radically over the last few years, and with on demand and just stuff that you can, you know, get off your computer and order online and everything, the DVD is becoming, you know, obsolete, you know, in front of our eyes. So, but this will be cool because you can have them all and stick them in a, you know, library, mm-hmm. you know, in your office and everything. I did. I actually have had all the episodes for a while that was given to me by a buddy. Who,
nice.
Well, this was sort of like he had gone to that special
yeah.
table at Comic-Con, the one they always seem to shut down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And he gave it to me as a birthday present. He goes, here's a birthday present. And it's like, it's all the Batman shows. And it's like, it was pretty good quality. They were taken off of TV or when, you know, whatever they'd done it. But it would be nice to have just really pristine quality copies of the 60s show. And,
oh, yeah.
and watch it. Unfortunately, it took them so long to get that set out that all of the guest villains are dead, you know?
Pretty much, yeah.
Except for Catwoman, I think.
Yeah, I hear Kim Novak was on the Academy Awards, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, she was never on Batman, was she?
She wasn't one of the Catwomen? No?
No, it was Lee Merriweather, who's uh-huh. still alive, I believe. Julie Newmar and
Eartha Kitt,
who has passed on.
Because they were giving a thing about Heath Ledger, and I thought they had a couple people from like the Batman world on there. I'm mistaken.
It's just I think that most of them the people who were like the all the guys who played Mr. Is Eli Wallach still around?
Ooh, I don't know.
That's.
It is sad. Most of them are.
Yeah, because Otto Preminger and George Sanders all played, and Eli Wallach all played Mr. Freeze, and I think they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
The actors who played Gordon and Alfred and Chief O'Hara and are all gone.
I was watching an Outer Limits episode the other day with Commissioner Gordon on it. I was like, who is this guy? Why does he look so familiar? And I finally placed
him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. It was one of the ones with the alien bugs take over your mind or something, and he was the leader.
Was that the Zandy Misfits?
No, that wasn't Zandy Misfits. Oh. That was one of the other ones I watched.
Yeah, the Outer Limits had some really cool-looking creatures.
Yeah, they did.
There's one that scared the crap out of me called the Megazoid, which was in an episode called The Duplicate Man. And if you see the costume, it's just, like, so ridiculous. But as a kid, I'm up late, watching this creepy black-and-white show with scary music and it was like a gorilla with a bird's face.
Hmm.
And it could imitate languages and it would kill you. And it was I think it was a creation of Janos Prochaska, who was a famous Hollywood monster maker at the time. Before there was Rick Baker, there was this guy, Janos Prochaska, and he made... not really lifelike, but very interesting-looking gorillas. You always knew it was a guy in a gorilla suit or a chimp suit or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he, in the 60s, he was the monster guy, you know?
Okay.
And he would often cannibalize his own suits. And for this Outer Limit, he said, well, I've got a gorilla body, and I got this kind of weird-looking bird head. And let me add a few more feathers and add this stuff, and we'll do it. He did a few Star Trek monsters. He was probably best known for the white gorilla, the Mugatu in A Private Little War. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, it was a white gorilla because I remember at that time there was a white gorilla that had been found in Africa. So he made a white gorilla suit. Nice. And then he just said, okay, let's put a few horns and spines and funky things on it. Good. Alien. That's all you need to do on Star Trek. Just take an animal, stick a horn on its head, and a couple of antenna, and then there's an alien. You know, how can you prove it's not? So,
are you excited for Godzilla?
Yeah, it looks really great. You looking forward to that one?
I am.
Yeah, she loves watching the old ones too. We've been getting through those slowly but surely.
All about Mothra.
Yeah. Boy, this one looks terrific. I wanted to like Pacific Rim more than I did, and I thought it was fine.
It was very enjoyable.
Yeah, but this one looks like it just looks badass. Godzilla actually looks frightening in this one, and in the early ones, he's not a frightening monster. He's just, you know, he's awesome. He's got amazing, you know, just the sheer, vastness of him, his enormity makes him, he's more of a force of nature.
Yeah.
But this one, he actually looks like kind of nightmarish. Like when you see the mother and her child run into, I guess, a bunker or a truck or something, and they close the doors and you just see that as it closed, you just see Godzilla full on, you know, headed mm-hmm. toward them. It looks really kind of cool and creepy. So,
yeah, they really haven't made him menacing looking since the first one.
No.
And that was just because it was the first time he's seen something like that.
Yeah. And in the later ones, like after Godzilla, you know, after around about Godzilla King Kong or Godzilla and Mothra, he just becomes good old Godzilla.
Yeah,
you know?
He has, like, the sun around. And...
yeah. And he fights with, you know, Jet Jaguar and King Caesar and other, you know, kind of benevolent monsters. And
And he's always fighting a monster worse than he is, like, you know, King Ghidorah or something like that. And so it's like, you know, he's grumpy and bad-tempered, but he's still good old Godzilla over on Monster Island. He's there if we need him. So what if we lose a few pagodas and skyscrapers when he runs when he runs through town? It's like he's fighting for us, you know. He's on our side now. You know, we can evacuate the city, we can let him do what he does, and then at the end we'll all say, sayonara, Godzilla, and off he goes. And good old Godzilla. We love Godzilla. But yeah, that one, it's amazing. I had an animator friend who was going to Japan fairly often in the late 80s, back when I was working at Lucasfilm, and he would bring home Godzilla toys, you know, and you'd bring them for people in our office, you know, when he came back. And I remember getting this one toy from him, and it was Godzilla. I don't know how this imagery happened. It's a weird, it's Godzilla as a Playboy bunny, or it's Godzilla. And he's got bunny ears and a little outfit. And I know there are a lot of Japanese characters, female characters, who wear like the bunny outfit. Yeah. So it, I don't know if this was an actual Playboy bunny or Godzilla as some sort of anime stripper girl, cute girl, pixie girl character. But it was Godzilla in a pink little thing with little pink bunny ears. And it's like, oh, that's great. That'll go on my desk right here. Under my coffee cup. It's amazing. That monster has been shopped around and merchandised and, I don't know, in a zillion different ways.
Yeah.
But always good. So I don't think you'll be wearing the bunny ears in this new movie. But I am looking forward. When does that open?
Probably summer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we got the Grand Budapest Hotel is this week, and that looks great. Mm-hmm. That's Wes Anderson, and that looks really terrific. I want to go see that. Just even if the movie's no good, and there's no way it can't be good, it just looks like amazing eye candy that he created. The this little a little 1930-ish European town and an old style hotel that's going to be just and Bill Murray's in it playing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, for sure be a wacky role, and it just looks so good. I can't wait to see that. Some of the Muppets come out soon.
Yeah, that's coming out very soon. April or May or something, right?
No, the end of this
end of this month.
I think it's the end of March, isn't it? Oh, wow. It's like 3 weeks.
That's even quicker than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. I love that last one.
Yeah. This one looks good too. You know, they're running ads for it everywhere. Like the Muppets are, every place you look, there's a Muppet, you know, promoting something. Like there was an ad today for, I don't know, they've done car ads today. Yeah. The ad was for Lipton tea of all things. It's actually a clever ad. It had New York City inhabited by nobody other than animal. Everybody, it was like Bizarro World. Instead of Bizarros everywhere, everyone was animal. Or a woman animal, or a baby. They actually had Muppet baby animal as it back. and animal cab drivers, construction workers, animal everywhere. They must have built thousands of animal puppets for this one commercial. And it has Kermit going through town, you know, like with everybody, with all the animals like yelling and screaming and growling at him. Then he has a refreshing cup of Lipton tea, and that puts it all in perspective. You know, I think Miss Piggy was in it too at some point, but everybody else was animal. And I thought, that's kind of a clever commercial. And I hope the movie's that clever.
Yeah.
Sometimes something disturbing about this, it looks like it's really a lot about the celebrity cameos and everything.
Yeah, I'm worried that they're focusing so much on Ricky Gervais. I'm not a huge Ricky Gervais fan.
Well, he's awfully funny, but again, he's very caustic and everything. Yeah. So to what degree is he in there? I mean, the reason that Siegel worked so good in the last movie was that he's very sweet. You know, he plays a very sweet character.
Yeah.
And you needed him to sort of bring Walter into the picture and Amy Adams and everything. You know, they worked well because they had their own story, but this guy looks like he's, I don't know, Ricky Gervais could run away with it, or Ty Burrell, or Tina Fey, or something. They're all actors I like to watch, but, you know, with the Muppets, you know, it's weird to have them, you know, co-starring with them. This one kind of reminds me of the second one they did when Jim Henson was alive, which had Charles Grodin and Diana Rigg in it.
Oh, the Great Muppet Caper.
Yeah, this is because this one's a caper also. Yeah, it
feels a lot like that, definitely.
Yeah, it's almost like, okay, we're doing a second movie. All right, let's send him to Europe and have him mm-hmm. do a caper and you know, throw him in jail and frame for a crime they didn't commit, which I think is what happened to Piggy.
In the long run, I feel like that's one of my favorite of the Muppets.
What, the...
The Great Muppet Caper.
Yeah, I mean, it's not bad. It's...
It has the Happiness Hotel bit. And...
Yeah, it's got some good stuff in it. I'll tell you what I... here's what sort of makes that one hard for me is that there's the musical bits don't really add to it, you know, that much.
Yeah.
The Kermit Piggy romance in that one bored me. And the reason why was because in the first one we have the Kermit Piggy romance. Mm-hmm. And now we're going into another Muppet movie and now we have Kermit and Piggy romancing and meeting each other for the first time, and they met each other for the first time in the previous movie.
Yeah.
And we know what their history is from the TV show and every appearance they've made since then. I really don't want to sit through, you know, and it went on so long. It's like, even when I saw it when I was in my 20s, I can't distance myself from the fact that I'm watching a huge Busby Berkeley number revolving around painted foam, you know? Mm-hmm. There are all these girls and male and female dancers, and it's technically beautiful to look at, but it's a puppet pig, and it's one that fell in love with the frog in the previous movie, and they don't have that much of a chemistry or a distance that I can think of them as anything but a couple. I know that they go home together, you know? Mm-hmm. I know that they have a relationship in the larger world outside of this movie. I felt like I was... It's like if every Superman movie took us back to Krypton, and they pretty much all do. So that's probably why I don't like the Superman movies.
Exactly.
You know, as much as the Batman movie. Okay, parents are shot. Moving on. But that kind of bogged it down. And I do remember there was that bicycle scene. Like, we put Kermit on a bike in the first movie. Let's put all the Muppets on bikes in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of riding. That's the thing that kind of wears on me from the second one and the third one, is there are scenes just in there that don't further the plot along. The music is there, and you're just supposed to watch, you know, shit happen, but it's not any shit that moves the plot along, and it's not very funny. Like in the third one, when Piggy says, when they do the Muppet Baby musical scene,
mm-hmm.
it's just like, hey, let's sell some dolls. Okay, let's do a spinoff. Okay, I'm going to randomly suggest, what if we were babies, and that's going to lead to a big random musical number which shows us as babies, and now we can spin that off into a TV series and a whole merchandising line.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I really was bored, and I was going like, I don't even think I made it through the third one. I mean, I've seen it in bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But I do remember actually walking out of the theater when I saw it, and when the Muppet Baby segment came on, I came back after 20 minutes, but I went off and ate, and then I came back and watched the wedding scene.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, I went out and got food, and then I came back in because the Muppet Baby so pissed me off. And I knew plenty of people who worked on the cartoon in the...
Yeah, I love the 80s cartoon. And 90s. Yeah, the cartoon was one of my favorites growing up.
For whatever reason, the magic of the Muppet Babies never worked on me. Wow. I tried watching it, and...
Must have been an age thing. Like,
it could have been. It could have been, yeah. To me, everything that made the Muppets really wonderful was the fact that they were puppets. And when they became cartoon characters, they were limited by the budget and the kind of the restraints of Saturday morning. And, you know, the magic is that they are inanimate things that wander that wander around. And when they became cartoons... I don't know. It sort of made them too real or too... Well, it took away what was special about them in my eyes.
The cartoon was very much focused on them just homaging everything around them. It was the pulp culture reference
galore. Yeah.
There wasn't really the creativity that they usually had or the humor that the TV series had.
Yeah, I get why it was popular. I know that it has legions of fans, and if they brought it back today, it would probably be wildly popular too. And it's probably coming back before you know it.
Yeah.
But it's, for me, it's like the fact that it was, you know, all these guys down here doing this and watching monitors and creating the impossible by shooting them out of cannons, and and when they would do things against a black art, they would dress in black and move those around. That's really where the artistry of the Muppets came in, and like, and the soul of Jim Henson, I think, was and that's what's missing from them now, I guess, for me, is like they're not they're spending the money, they're taking some chances, but they're not doing, they're not taking it to the next level. I know in the fall they did this Lady Gaga and the Muppets special.
Oh my God, I tried watching that because I love the Muppets so much, but it was so bad.
Right? I mean, yeah, it was. I wasn't the only one.
No, it was impossible to watch.
Yeah. And I remember it was like, it was just, it was weird and soulless. Like, you know, it was ostensibly or arguably a Christmas special, but they expunged the word Christmas from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's your holiday memory? What's your favorite holiday song or holiday gift? It's like, you know, and that kind of pisses me off anyway, you know, because it's not a celebration of any particular holiday. So it might as well be celebrating Arbor Day for as much as we care. But also, you know, it just made me remember like the John Denver special where they're all sitting by the fireside and just singing old songs, and how warm and nice that is, or the one where they all go to Fozzie's house for Christmas. And you know, those are fun.
That's sweet.
Yeah. And this one, they would have long stretches with Lady Gaga playing the piano. Then they'd have these dancers behind her, and I'm going like, if this was a Henson special, those dancers would be wearing funny furry heads, or they would be dressed as, you know, in weird costumes or something. Or that would be fun. Like if it's Lady Gaga, you know, playing the piano, and they're all like those big giant blue monsters.
Yeah, or they're all Camilla's dance troupe or something.
Yeah, chickens or something. Yeah. I don't want to look at emaciated dance, you know, like human dancers behind her and pretty boys and stuff like that. You know, it's just like or showgirls, you know, put a weird hat on them, dress them like pigs, something, do something. But it was like, that was hard. I couldn't watch it. I watched it on the computer and fast forwarded through most of it.
I couldn't even do that. I like watched a couple sequences. I'm like, I'm not even going to try anymore.
Yeah.
Not worth it.
Well, I guess elements of the Henson creativity stay alive in, you know, through his family and some of those other things, but I guess the Muppets, you know, that there's something, you know, heartbreaking that Henson's name is nowhere on the new movie, like, not even like, you know, inspired by Jim Henson or something like that. It's just they own them completely, and you know, they're a Disney product now. So, well, I hope it'll be good. Tina Fey looks funny, she's always funny. The Muppets aren't funny, hopefully. I don't know.
Well, that was a sad place to wind down.
Yeah, we should talk about something. There's something else opening this week that I could... Oh, Sherman and Peabody.
Yeah.
Can't get it up for Sherman and Peabody, yeah?
No, I mean, I appreciate the fact that they're going to all these Jay Ward cartoons and stuff, but it just seems like completely the opposite of what I remember.
Yeah.
So.
Rocky and Bullwinkle, they were fun, you know?
Yeah.
And the fun was in the simplicity, and then these things that are very simple and made to be enjoyed, you know, they over 50 years they have this, they become these cultural icons, and whether or not they can support a movie or not, they just will be made because there's money to be made in the
name recognition. I'm going to go see that, or my kids are going to see that because I recognize the name.
Yeah
As some part of me trusts it as a brand.
All I want to know is, when's the Tennessee Tuxedo movie coming out?
Damn straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, finally...
Woody Woodpecker even. Come on.
Oh, there's one in development. I know some guys are working on it. But Tennessee Tuxedo, I mean, he was part of... He wasn't by Jay Ward, but he was part of Total Television, you know, and which sort of was the umbrella for everything, you know, from Jay Ward and all that. And he was more like by the guys who created Underdog, and they also did Tennessee Tuxedo. You know, the other day I was thinking about Tennessee Tuxedo, and for the first time in my life, it's taken me 50 years
I got the joke of his name. The joke of the title of the show.
What is that?
It's Tennessee Tuxedo and his tails. Tuxedo has tails.
Yes.
So it's not Tennessee Tuxedo and his tails, like his stories, which I thought was his kid. I was going, Tennessee Tuxedo and his tails. And I go like,
never telling.
Oh, tails, tuxedo. Oh, okay. He's a penguin. He wasn't wearing a tuxedo, but a tuxedo has tails, like an old style tuxedo has tails.
Yes.
So it's Tennessee Tuxedo and his tails. Like the oh, I get it. I get it. It only took me 50 freaking years to figure it out. But you know, I figured out that Riff Raff was a parody of George Raft. Like the second time I saw the character, you know, it's like, oh, he's a gangster. Oh, he's like George Raft. The guy's always got the, oh, yeah. Riff Raff, Riff, George Raft. And you know, Simon Bar Sinister is Mr. Potter from yeah. It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, actually both Riff Raff and Simon Bar Sinister were, you know, it was, he's sort of like George Raft, but actually that voice is Sheldon Leonard. You know, who played gangsters all the time.
Yeah.
And he was in It's a Wonderful Life because he plays Nick the bartender, you know. Out you two pixies go, through the door, through the window. And Simon Bar Sinister is you know, Mr. Potter. George Bailey, underdog, I'll shoot you with my shrinking ray. Same voice, you know. And I guess, I think Alan Swift did both those voices, and maybe he was watching It's a Wonderful Life or something, or I don't know, he's just based them on character types at the time, but I think that's really interesting. That
I noticed a lot of cartoons back in the day focused on characters of movies, like, oh, this actor in this movie played this part, I'm going to homage that part
yeah.
in this cartoon character.
And that was back in the days when you had really great character actors
oh, yeah.
who had played these iconic roles in movies, and then this would have been 62 or 64 around then. They were moving into TV, so you would see guys like William Frawley, who was on I Love Lucy. Mm-hmm. He used to play like shady political guys or press agents or hustler type characters, mm-hmm. you know, comical versions of them in movies. So they, you know, they moved him into TV. And William Frawley, who was, or William Demarest, I mean, who was on, who was the same type of character who would show up on My Three Sons. Then you had Western sidekicks like Smiley Burnett and Pat Buttram showing up on
Pat
shows.
Pat Buttram, definitely.
Yeah, showing up on Green Acres mm-hmm. and Petticoat Junction. Man, I'm showing my knowledge of old character actors. We don't have character actors anymore.
No.
We don't. It's like, it's moved beyond that. I read this interesting article the other day about how comedians are, the top comedians these days don't lampoon anything. They don't go after big targets anymore because, you know, they don't want to go after government because unless the guy is really a heel, you know, it's mm-hmm. safe, you know, and you can't go after a liberal target because then you're, you know, suddenly you're not, you know, of the group, you know, yeah. who's currently in power. And, you know, they don't make fun of issues. They just make fun, you know, it's like a lot of shit jokes, fart jokes, dope jokes. Lots and lots of dope jokes. And so it's like most of the comedians now are young guys on dope making fun of how do we get our dope and how do we stay stoned. And the outcome of most stories is how do you know, my obstacle is I'm a young guy who's the most popular guy of all my friends who are all knockabout buddies. And we all like being knockabout buddies and maybe getting laid every once in a while as long as we're respectful of women and getting stoned. And how do we, and our obstacle is we want to do all that and then at the end succeed and be rich. So it's all these guys, you know, the ultimate thing is success. It isn't, yeah. It's not the underdog anymore and it's not a guy fighting against a big system like Charlie Chaplin in Modern Times or even the Marx Brothers making fun of an authority, you know, like authority, like in like a college or the Marx Brothers would go into a pretty solid situation like college or a mm-hmm. hospital or department store or government. And, you know, what?
Or cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. Cruise. Yeah. And then they would make fun of it or a hotel, you know, mm-hmm. running a hotel or something like that and set it on its ear. And most comedies now are knockabout guys going into knockabout situations and knocking about and everything is
is really cool and awesome. And so the comedy doesn't seem to have a lot of teeth. Even, you know, Harold Ramis passed away recently, and even Harold Ramis would do the, you know, Animal House is like, that could have been a Marx Brothers movie. It's just,
oh yeah,
these guys up against the rule breakers up against a stiff and ultimately, you know, corrupt college and college system. And Caddyshack, you know, the guys, you know, struggling against the, you know, the blue bloods and stuck up assholes of the country club. And there's not a lot of defiance anymore in comedy. It's just easygoing guys doing easygoing stuff. And occasionally there are shit jokes. I mean, The Hangover. I mean, Hangover is funny and all, but these are just guys who go to Vegas and lose it, you know, and they all get drunk and party and regret it until they go off and do it again in the next movie.
Yeah, so, exactly.
So it's not like there's a lot of David and Goliath chances being taken in comedy anymore, which is a shame. Every subject we bring up, we always kind of go like, oh, well, that kind of sucks. Is there nothing good or fun we can talk about to end out the podcast?
Just Legos.
Legos? You like Legos? Legos.
Everything Legos. Is awesome.
Everything
is awesome.
I love Legos.
I sure like Batman in that movie.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
I would sure love to be able to write Batman like that. Just an affable jerk.
Just a darkness.
Raging bat hole. I love the scene where he's throwing the... Got it on the first try. Because that's the thing is Batman is... And that boy, that would annoy me when I was writing Batman. It's like the magic batarang. God, I grew to hate the magic batarang. It goes... It always hits on the first try and can cut through anything you need it to cut through.
Yep.
And it does whatever it does. You know, Batman should come home and the batarang's like pressing his pants. Hello, batarang. Hello, Batman. Did you press my pants? Yes, and I gave Alfred the night off. I fixed you the meatloaf tonight. And, I've put Robin to bed. Batarang, you do everything. Do it so perfect.
I love you, batarang.
I love you, batarang. I won't do that, Batman. I'm sorry. Just clip me back on your belt there and we're fine. But yeah, once the batarang becomes... The batarang might as well be talking to him because of all the things it can do. So I was happy to see that the batarang didn't quite go where he wanted it to go, even though he did believe it would go. So, but Lego Movie had a lot of fun stuff in it. Yeah. Okay, now we're going to stop so we can go out on that. Well, see you next time. Anything to say, Misty?
No, Paul, I think you said it all very well, and you are wonderfully articulate, as always.
If I'm not here next week, it's because she heard that and murdered me.
I was going to say, wow.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Radio Rashi. If you've enjoyed this episode, let everyone know by leaving a review in the iTunes Store. It's a great way to help others find us. You can also leave comments on RadioRashi.com, Facebook.com/RadioRashi, or follow us on Twitter @RadioRashi or @Paul_Dini to leave us questions. Thanks for listening, and tell your friends.